To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for another foray into the grim darkness of the 41st millennium. To live within the Imperium of Mankind, it would be inevitable to hear dark rumors of alien beasts tearing through the stars, or of heretical warlords seizing dominion over once loyal worlds to carve out the foundations of a new, terrible empire. But the sheer horror of such tales would ever be tempered by the knowledge that out in the void, that the indomitable warriors of the Space Marines are standing vigil as the final bulwark to defend our species from utter damnation. The Astartes are split between innumerable chapters, each containing around 1,000 Marines, and in order to protect the vastness of the fading Imperium, they will be stationed all throughout the stars, ensuring that no world will be beyond their watch, and that no enemy will be beyond their wrath. But through the long years, each chapter will have endured a truly arduous existence, fending off the horrors of our darkest nightmares. But from their experiences, many will have developed their own unique identities and cultures, some of which, however, may be seen as bordering on the heretical. The chapter which we shall discuss today undoubtedly holds some of the most questionable of traditions, and if these were known to the wider Imperium, then we can safely say that it would elicit a most retributive response from some of the more puritanical of inquisitorial agents. I would, of course, be referring to the infamous exorcists, who have become somewhat legendary in their resilience and effectiveness in battles against the hell-spawned demon kin. But the reasons behind their psychic durability are actually rather horrifying. We will first go over their founding before exploring a pivotal battle located upon the world of Totem 4, which came to forever change the very nature of this chapter. After, we will fully reveal the ways in which these Marines have come to embrace the darkness beyond our own plane of reality. As whilst it does sound rather heretical, it has proven itself to be perhaps their own greatest strength. Finally, I will go over their chapter's culture with a particular look into their mysterious fortress monastery, named as the Basilica Malefex. But without further ado, it is time for us to explore a chapter of Marines who are thus far seen as being near incorruptible and whose sheer tenacity in the fight against all things demonic is perhaps only eclipsed by the mysterious group of the Grey Knights. As we progress through this topic, however, we will learn of their many dark secrets, and it will become very clear as to why many of the factions within the Imperium will consider these Astartes as bordering on the heretical. The forces of the Adeptus Astartes have existed since the days of the Great Crusade, where the Emperor led his 20 legions out into the void to purge the stars of humanity's many enemies and to conquer the galaxy in the name of all mankind. But as time passed and as the malady of the Horus Heresy came and went, it became clear that maintaining a single legion, which had no restrictions into how many Marines it could hold, was simply a risk too great to the young Imperium. Thus, in order to curtail the chance of another civil war occurring throughout the stars, the legions were split into various chapters, which could only maintain around 1,000 Marines each. But with this change, over the following millennia, it became somewhat of an inevitability for the new chapters to form their own unique identities, to the point where many of them would hold almost no relation to that of their parental legion. It is important to note that the creation of the new chapters was not a one-time occurrence, and rather, when the Imperium is faced off with a dire situation, Then the High Lords may ordain for several or even dozens of new chapters to be brought into existence. This would be an event known as a founding. And ever since the Emperor's own creation of the Astartes, there have been around 27 of these recorded events, including the most recent Ultima founding, which introduced the Primaris Space Marines to the galaxy. Given the magnitude of producing new chapters of the Marines, it makes sense that every single aspect of a founding would be monitored and recorded by the various scribes and scholars of the Imperium. However, there was one such event where most of these details were curiously lost. Such was the extent of this obscured knowledge that we do not know of the exact date from when this event occurred, but we can confidently say that it happened at some point between the late 35th and early 36th millennium. But in any case, this was the 13th founding to have been performed within the Imperium. However, due to the aforementioned losses in our historical data, it has been referred to more colloquially as the Dark Founding. To look through the surviving records of this event, we would find nothing but contradictory points or of cryptic questions which hold no answers. But as a most worrying note, we do not even know of how many chapters were founded from this endeavor. We do, however, know of two chapters who can be directly traced to the Dark Founding. One of these would be of the Death Spectres who have come to defend the mysterious Ghoul Stars, whereas the other would be of the rather occult chapter, named as the Exorcists. The actual reasoning for creating this chapter has been lost, along with many of the specific details of their founding, and so we cannot reliably state as to why the Imperium saw fit to bring them into existence, nor of what threat they would be expected to counter. Most chapters will cherish and seek to preserve the tale of their own origin, but for the Exorcists, it is said that the vast majority of them are ignorant to their own story. Supposedly, only the most senior members of the chapter know of the true reasons as to why they were produced. But even these captains and commanders will be hesitant to share this knowledge with their own brothers. This, however, causes no friction to the members of the Exorcists, as they have come to understand that maintaining their own secrecy is to be a defense against those who would criticize or scrutinize their questionable traditions. The Black Templars, being one of the most zealous of chapters, have never been too happy with the constant silence over the Exorcists' founding tale. They have repeatedly accused the mysterious chapter of harboring dark secrets, which from their view must relate to the taint of heresy. But in truth, we have come to learn that both the Templars and the Exorcists are actually distant brothers, as they have both sourced their gene seed from the Imperial Fists and from the Primarch Rogel Dorn. None within the Imperium are privy to this information, as the actual source of their gene seed was classified by an inquisitorial representative who moved to conceal the truth long before this chapter was ever first deployed. In any case, though most of their founding details were lost, we do know that they were formed to be compliant with the Codex Astartes, meaning that they were organized as a chapter of 1,000 Marines, split between 10 distinct companies. The Exorcists, however, would not always follow this structure, and as we will later learn, their ranks have slightly swelled, necessitating the formation of two additional companies to shore up their forces. As I previously stated, much of their founding tale has been lost, and so we cannot reliably speak on their early conflicts. However, the scant information available does reveal that they repeatedly distinguished themselves in battle, standing as proud angels of the Emperor on many a battlefield. Slowly, the Exorcists were carving out a name for themselves, being witnessed by fellow Imperial forces as an exemplary chapter whose own adaptability led the Imperials to victory through even the darkest of conflicts. The official records of their victorious streak, however, seemed to come to an abrupt end after their deployment upon the world of Totem IV. This was not because they had failed in their mission, but rather it was because the chapter underwent a most radical change, and from that day on, they were to embrace secrecy as one of their defining strengths. The planet, named as Totem IV, once existed as a cardinal world whose faithful citizens would venerate the teachings of the Ecclesiarchy to spread the word of the Emperor throughout the stars. But it was during the 35th millennium that the impossible creatures of the warp turned their attention to this bastion of faith and launched a demonic incursion to plunge this world into chaos. Rather sadly, those who lived upon this world were always incredibly proud of their independent spirit, and so they withheld from asking for aid from the Imperium until the warp-born invasion was in full swing. Amidst the armies of mankind, it was the young exorcists who first pledged themselves to liberate this world from the taint of chaos. But as they landed, the magnitude of this incursion began to sink in. A greater demon of Tzeentch, named as Kerioth the Shrouded, was found at the head of this eldritch host, comprised of the roiling horrors and shifting beasts of the Changer of Ways. Though the demons outnumbered the Astartes by a nearly impossible factor, the immense psychic onslaught unleashed upon the field was curiously unable to pierce the minds of the Marines. Many of the deployed guardsmen, upon seeing the demons of Tzeentch, were overwhelmed by the intrusive whispers, promising them with salvation if they pledged themselves to chaos. Yet these same promises were hardly even recognized by the battle brothers of the exorcists. The many immaterial sorcerers were hunted down and purged upon the warped battlegrounds in the hopes that it would prevent more guardsmen from succumbing to the darker powers. But this action did little but confuse and anger the presiding Lord of Change. As a somewhat desperate ploy, Kerioth the Shrouded charged through the demonic legions to find the chapter master of the exorcists, a marine named as Enoch Trismegistus, only to channel its entire essence into a single Empyrean bolt to possess the marine and take control of his body. None were aware of this change, and so the false directives spoken through the mouth of Trismegistus were successful in disrupting the lines of the Astartes, who were forced to take up disadvantageous positions against the demon kin. A flicker of the chapter master, however, still persisted within his stolen mind. All the while, he continued to fight against the demonic essence of Kerioth, a process which garnered him with a trove of forbidden knowledge as to the very nature of the hell-spawned demons. As the days passed, and once he was ready to do so, Trismegistus was able to send his own psychic signal to the chief librarian, a man named as Gotos, and together they were able to entrap and banish the greater demon, expunging it from not only his own mind, but also from reality itself. As Kerioth the Shrouded melted away, back into the hellish warp, the remaining demons soon followed suit, putting an end to this incursion and once more bringing peace to Totem IV. But despite their victory, the exorcists were unable to conceal the possession of their chapter master, as unfortunately, the Inquisition had seen fit to deploy a group of the Plutonian sect upon the field, and these radical agents had borne witness to everything that had transpired. the Inquisitorial Squad had already been suspicious of the unnatural resistance of the exorcists towards the influences of the Zentian demons, and the possession of their chapter master was just too significant to ignore. Thus, the Plutonians asserted the authority of the Ordo Malleus over the exorcists, relieving Trismegistus of command over his chapter before ordering for the construction of an inquisitorial base upon their home world of Banish. The former chapter master was forced to undergo a series of relentless interrogations, but during this process, the Plutonians were openly sharing in their own theories towards demonic possessions. It is important to clarify here that this sect of the Inquisition was always regarded as being incredibly radical, as they had a history of attempting to utilize demon hosts and tainted artifacts as a means towards protecting the Imperium. But regardless, after several grueling months, Trismegistus was declared as absolved from his former accusations, and now that his soul was again seen as pure, he could once more stand as the chapter master to the exorcists. But before leaving the chambers of the Plutonians, he turned to their senior members with a proposition of his own. He stated that he agreed with their ideas of using the powers of chaos to best vanquish the demon kin. And since his own purity had been verified by the Inquisition, that perhaps he could be used to put their ideas to the test. His offer was that he would pledge his entire chapter to stand as partners to the Plutonians, and that through their methods would they find a way to banish the demon, no matter how heretical it may seem. As Trismegistus emerged to greet his brothers as their chapter master once more, the inquisitorial agents of the Plutonian sect rapidly set out to enact their plan. Their once temporary base of operations was expanded to produce a permanent home upon Banish, yet every trace of their presence here was to be concealed, as the more conservative of agents within the Inquisition would surely descend with righteous fury if they discovered the diabolical plans that were now in motion. The chapter master, speaking to the full roster of exorcists, briefed them on the coming changes and of the infernal trials which they would soon be forced to overcome. Each battle brother and each new recruit would be forced to endure that which he experienced upon the field of Totem IV, in that they would be possessed by a hell-spawned demon of the warp. They would harbor this tainted entity for a prolonged duration, until a Plutonian agent sees fit to drive the Neverborn from their minds. And only once the Marine has recovered will he be able to stand as a fully fledged brother of the exorcists. This entire plan may seem rather heretical to us, but let us explore it in more detail, as it is undeniably a rather unique tradition to be found within the ranks of the Marines. To begin with, the process will commence in a vast facility known as the Halls of Tempering. Within, the walls will be adorned with hexagramic seals, interspaced by burning scones, filling the room with the Inquisition's own incense as a means to prevent the demonic creatures from escaping. At the center of the room will be a chair, to which a recruit will be strapped into, lest he break free and escape to bring havoc to their world of Banish. At this point, the aspirant will be imbued with a demonic entity, which I should note will be of a far less powerful variety than of the greater demon who possessed Trismegistus. None can anticipate as to how exactly this possession will manifest itself within the Marine. Many will remain in a state of somewhat disturbed meditation, with their stillness only broken by small twitches, presumably caused by the demonic presence attempting to force its host to break their bonds and escape. The Plutonian overseers, whilst radical indeed, will not be too happy if the demon does in fact break free, and they would much rather for the Marine to remain in his meditative state. As the aspirant is quite literally fighting for his life against a demonic beast within his mind, the Plutonians will quietly proceed to study and monitor the progress of this possession. It is quite rare to be able to examine a demonic intrusion such as this for so long, as most humans would succumb to the dark almost immediately, but the exorcists seem to be able to withstand the warped influences for a shockingly long time. Because of this innate durability, the Plutonians may keep a demon within the aspirant for days, weeks, or even entire months before finally relenting and freeing the Marine from his torment. This is indeed rather dangerous, even to the Marines, but we must remember that the inquisitorial agents are not Astartes themselves, and so they hold no true form of brotherhood, nor feel any sense of responsibility for the lives of those who they will so carelessly taint with the essence of a demon. Once they have decided that sufficient time has passed and that they have extracted enough information from the trial, they will expunge the demon, entrapping it once more in an accursed receptacle before leaving the aspirant to be tended to by the brothers of the chapter. The recruit will then be permitted to rest and recuperate from their experience, reflecting on the horrors which they saw whilst a demonic beast crawled through their very soul. Despite being rather traumatic, the ends truly justify the means, as those who manage to survive this distressing trial will be left almost entirely fearless, but more importantly, they will be nigh incorruptible to further attempts of demonic possessions. I should note, however, that this process of harboring and banishing a demonic entity is not one which will leave an aspirant unharmed. Those who survive are often marred by warp-borne mutations, with some Marines sprouting great horns, whereas others will watch as their own skin cracks, shifting in such a manner that they will appear to be made of dark stone. These abnormalities, however, are only physical, and they do not hinder the Marine from performing his duties to any capacity. With that being said, however, their mutations are rather curious, and so if one was to look upon an unarmored exorcist, they may question as to why their bodies have been racked by the clear touch of chaos. As such, those within this chapter will typically remain entirely covered, concealing their warped features with large hoods and shawls, and it would be rather uncharacteristic for any to remove their helmets unless they were entirely sure that only their fellow Marines would see them for what they truly are. According to ancient law, once they have recovered, another trial will commence, where the Marine will be secretly taken into the Eye of Terror to prove that they may endure the pervasive taint of chaos. Those who have thus far survived to this point will almost always be successful, since, as we discussed, the prior trial leaves them in a state where they are almost entirely impervious to the insidious temptations of the warp. We cannot entirely verify this demonic pilgrimage, as it seems to have been omitted from most current sources, but nonetheless, it is still an interesting point if true. Those who have thus far been successful in passing their trials will then be expected to become experts on the topic of demonology, before they can truly stand as a battle brother of the exorcists. For instance, they will need to master and appropriately apply all of the 666 chapters of the Ordo Malleus text, the Liber Exorcismus. There are further arcane secrets which they must master, such as by sundering the seven seals of Salomoneth, but thus far the actual details of such a task remain as a mystery to us. And so we may only speculate as to how a recruit may prove himself as able during their trial. When encountering demons, either from a distance or upon a battlefield, It has been noted that the exorcist's adrenaline will spike to around 3 times that of a normal Marine. We are not entirely sure as to why this occurs to such a significant degree, but we may speculate that it is something of a stress response from them remembering their first traumatic possession during the trials of initiation. To return to the point of mutations, I should note that the process of withstanding a possession is not always successful, and in fact, during the early days of the Plutonians' plan, it seemed that many within their chapter were simply unable to endure the horrific event. Some of the aspirants who undergo the demonic trials will writhe and scream out an incomprehensible babble of curses as their own soul is consumed by the hell-spawned beast within them. At this point, they cannot be saved. The demon will still be expunged, but the aspirant will be left as a hollow husk of who he once was. And so, the chapter has come to name these failed brothers as the Broken Ones. From this point on, their own life will have been stolen away, and yet the exorcists will not cast out these failures, as they may still serve the chapter in their own way. The Broken Ones will be locked away within the darkest depths of their home, from where they will be used as living prisons to the demon kin. Any demons who are captured will be forced to possess the broken recruit, as while they remain within this hollow vessel, they will be unable to flee into the warp and pose any further danger to the meek souls of humanity. Over the long years, the chapter has amassed a chilling number of Broken Ones, and for as long as this tradition continues to exist, so too will the hollow souls continue to grow. Such is the danger from holding hundreds of demons within these living failures, directly beneath their homes, that the chapter has seen fit to produce a hidden prison craft known as the Purga Tomb. Many of the Broken Ones will be transferred to this ship, wherein which they are free to roam, ambling about as mindless, possessed beasts, screaming out their pleas, which will only be heard by the darkness of the void. None, save for the most senior members of the chapter, know of this vessel's existence, but for the past 5 millennia, it has drifted through the cosmos as the darkest secret of the exorcists, and we can only speculate as to the horrors which will transpire if any were to discover this haunted ghost ship. Before we proceed, I must reiterate that during the first attempts of possessing the exorcist recruits, that there was a significantly large rate of failure. Most within the chapter, or within the Plutonians who knew of the true losses, simply wrote it off as being a worthy price to pay. And yet, not everyone was so blasé about the presence of the Broken Ones. A cardinal, named as Rodrigo Nessun, had been attached to the inquisitorial sect of the Plutonians, but upon seeing the wretched failures who could not endure the possessions, he himself felt his mind twist, and he developed his own theory as to their nature. He saw them not as hollow vessels, but as a higher breed of warrior, who would be able to carry all of humanity on their backs, bringing our species into a new golden age, if only their true potential could be reached. Unbeknownst to even himself, this thought came from a whisper of the warp, which he had falsely attributed to his own spark of genius. But the wheels of fate were already in motion, and he was ready to free his broken kin, no matter the cost. Thus, he gathered up a contingent of the Broken Ones from their cells and fled into the nightmare of the warp, only to baptize the hollow souls in the Empyrean flames of chaos, crowning them as a war host named as the Swords of Epiphany. Upon learning of this treachery, the exorcists set out on a campaign known as Armadel's Purge, where the chapter hunted down every last trace of the warband, exterminating them wherever they stood, before they could reveal the chapter's dark practices to the wider galaxy. As it so stands today, the Swords of Epiphany are now extinct, and the existence of the Broken Ones is once more a shrouded secret, known only to the senior members of the Exorcists chapter. Now that we understand their quasi-heretical methods of initiating new members into their chapter, and of their keen specialization in combating the demonic menace of the warp, let us now investigate some more of their unique cultural and wartime practices. To begin with, I should note that the Exorcists are known to spend rather prolonged periods of time as a fleet-based chapter, where they will set out on a distant campaign for many years at a time, but once completed, they will always return to their homeworld, named as Banish. This is a feral planet, found within the borders of a quarantined sector known as the Narasimha Straits. We have some conflicting sources on where this region actually is, as during the Badab War, we had records stating that it was found within the Eastern Fringe, yet more modern accounts will claim that it is actually found within Segmentum Obscurus. In any case, it is a fairly nondescript planet, containing very little in the way of valuable resources or strategically important infrastructure, but in truth, this is rather beneficial for the Exorcists. Not only will their actions and plans be safe from the prying eyes of the Imperium, but also the hardy human populace who call this world as a home make for excellent recruits to be inducted into the chapter. But deep below the muck of a great swamp, we will find the fortress monastery of the Exorcists, named as the Basilica Malefex. At the center of this underground complex, we will find an immense atrium, known as the Cloister of Scars, wherein which they have placed the hallowed burial grounds for their fallen battle brothers. Many of the Exorcists will come here to silently meditate amidst the dead, or to simply pay their respects to the martyred heroes of the chapter. Rather interestingly, this central tomb also acts as something of a nexus point to the entirety of the base, since the vast majority of walkways and paths towards distant institutions will converge here. This means that to walk from one's own personal quarters to near anywhere else within the monastery, that you will be forced to see the burial grounds, and with them, the memories of the deceased. Throughout the complex, we will also find the dwellings of the Plutonian sect, and within, the Radical Inquisitors will be hard at work, investigating the secrets of the warp, to learn of how best to use the powers of demons for the good of all mankind. They will also be found within the murky halls of tempering, which will be where the aspirant members of the Exorcists are possessed by demonic entities, but only those who are successful in their endeavor will ever be seen to return. Behind a great blast door, mounted within an ornate stone arch, we will find the ever-guarded chambers of the chapter Librarius. This will be where the chief librarian resides, and from his seat of power will he direct the chapter serfs and junior librarians to record and preserve the great many secrets of the Exorcist chapter. A portion of their scholarly collection will contain forbidden secrets as to the nature of demons, including the methods needed to banish certain scions of the warp, or of how to best close a writhing warp portal if it appears upon a world. Most within the Inquisition would consider the knowledge here as being proof of the Exorcists' fall to chaos, as there are indeed ancient rituals to be found within the scrolls, specifically instructing the reader on how to summon an entire immaterial host. But none outside of the chapter will ever come to learn of such secrets, Every single book is sealed under a hexagrammatic ward, and the haze of purifying incense is so thick that one could easily become lost within this labyrinthine library, if not too careful. The actual demonic texts contained here, though vitally important to the chapter, do not form the bulk of their collected knowledge. We must remember that this is still a conventional chapter of the Space Marines, and so the majority of tomes will actually be related to matters of war, ranging from how to best exterminate an Orcoid presence, through to the tactics needed to flush out an Eldari troop from their shrouded fortifications. But beneath the Librarius, there is a secret chamber, with its presence being known to only the most senior of chapter commanders, and within it holds a single book named as the Demonarchia Claviculus. Supposedly, this contains the second most complete collection of the true names to major demonic lords, overshadowed only by the records held within the Grey Knight's Fortress Monastery upon Titan. It is said that the only way to grant a demon with the touch of eternal death is to utter its true name amidst a ritual. But once it is spoken, then the hell-spawned entity will be utterly destroyed, and it will never again be able to find its form, not even in the chaos of the warp. Leaving the Librarius, if we were to now stride into the dark headquarters of the Basilica Malefax, we will find the seat of the current chapter master to the Exorcists, a veteran marine named as Ymir Vasophon. Though it has been around 300 years since he was first initiated into the Brotherhood, the mental scars of his possession have never quite left him. For you see, his soul was imbued with a truly pernicious demon of Nurgle, and it was only after a full 7 days had passed that the Plutonian Inquisitors saw fit to free him of its taint. Ever since that day, though the demon was indeed expunged, he still hears the smug voice of this Nurglite beast taunting him with dark predictions, many of which have since been proven as true. Moving into the sprawling armories of the Exorcists, it will initially appear in much of the same way as of a typical chapter of the Astartes. Bolt guns, flamers, and Lascannons will line the walls, all to be maintained by the stationed tech marines flanked by mindless servitors. There are many chapter relics here, such as with the power armor, named as the Exile Plate. This has been etched with a series of potent wards, legible to only the chief librarian himself, which, if read in full, will tell of the methods needed to banish the most capricious of demons, and of how to purify the soul of one who has fallen to the ways of chaos. Close by, we will find the Apothecarian and the great vaults containing the purified gene seed of their chapter. As we previously discussed, this was originally sourced from the Legion of the Imperial Fists, and thus can be traced directly to their Primarch, Rogaldorn. Rather interestingly, the Exorcists are not known to acknowledge their gene father, and so none of their battle cries nor traditions will make any reference to Dorn at all. This is not done out of disrespect, but rather it's because most within the chapter are simply ignorant to their own genetic heritage. In truth, it is only once a Marine is promoted to the Veteran First Company that he will be informed of their connection to the Imperial Fists and to Rogaldorn, but for the Exorcists, this is yet another secret for them to guard with their lives. At one point in their history, it was believed that their chapter may have been created using the forbidden gene seed of the Grey Knights, which itself contained several traces of the Emperor's own DNA. This, however, was but a rumor, and the Exorcists' only relation to the Grey Knights is that they are both specialists in fending off the demonic masses. But beyond this, they share no genetic relation. On this point, I should reiterate that whilst they are indeed effective at fending off an incursion of the Neverborn, that the exorcists are far more flexible than of the Grey Knights, and so they will routinely be deployed into combat scenarios, which are free from the presence of demons. We will soon learn of some of their more notable of conflicts in our final chapter, but for now let us explore more of their fortress monastery. Moving from the heart of their fortress, we will find an interesting series of chambers, which have each been dedicated to a specific institution known as an Orison cult. These are small groups dedicated towards a certain duty of the chapter that any Marine may join if he feels drawn to its teachings. Those who are members of a cult will be known as Brother Initiates, and it will be their responsibility to further preserve and promote the traditions of their chosen group. Some will be based upon specific arts of war, such as would be the case with the Enochian Guard, where only the veteran members of the first company will be permitted to join. This Orison cult is named after their first chapter master, Enoch Trismegistus, and those who have joined will need to prove that they can channel his fury and honor his memory when deployed in battle. As such, one must have slain a true-born demon in single combat, and despite their innate effectiveness in fending off the powers of the warp, this itself remains as a truly exceptional feat to perform. Other groups, however, such as the Obelisk Thelemus, tends to favor the attention of the Tech Marines and Devastators, whereas almost every librarian will choose to join in the Cult of the Broken Tower. A Marine may choose to join as many Orison cults as he so desires, so long as he truly respects and upholds the teachings found within. As a final point, I will mention that whilst the Exorcists were indeed formed as a Codex-compliant chapter, since their inception, they have formed two additional scout companies, bringing their total company count to 12. The reason behind this is twofold. Firstly, their tactics often benefit from the mass deployment of scouts to reconnoiter a battlefield, or to draw their enemies towards their front lines. The second, and far darker reason, however, is that their demonic initiation rituals still hold a fairly high casualty rate, and so the chapter requires a larger roster of scouts to be available to replace those who will inevitably fall into the ranks of the Broken Ones. As was the case for nearly every chapter, the Exorcists received reinforcements in the way of the Primaris Marines during the Indomitus era. However, during their journey to the chapter homeworld of Banish, every single Grey Shield was killed during a large conflict with a demonic force. Thus, the Exorcists were only provided with the technologies and methods needed to produce new Primaris Marines. But so far it seems that their possession rituals are still successful when applied to the newly enhanced recruits. As I had previously stated, though the Exorcists are indeed inured to the darker powers of the warp, it does not mean that they will only be deployed to battlefields where a demonic incursion is in full swing. Rather, they are just as flexible of a chapter as any other, and so they have been pivotal in several conflicts where they were called upon to face off with foes of a more material nature. But despite their adaptability, the following engagements, which we shall now cover, will often contain a slightly demonic tinge. Yet we must remember that they are indeed the experts in the matters of exorcising these immaterial horrors. For instance, during the early years of the 40th millennium, the Exorcists were deployed to the cardinal world of Dimmermaar, which some of you may remember as being the birthplace of the famed ecclesiarch, Sebastian Thor. In any case, it was during a rather devastating invasion of the brutish orcs that a chaotic cult emerged from the darkness of the Undercity, plunging this holy world into a three-pronged war. The exorcists were quick to respond to the call, and from their first reconnaissance efforts, they identified a single demonic entity named as the Horned God, who was speaking through the various cult leaders, spurring them into further acts of heresy. This demon prince was eventually cornered within a desolate maze, constructed out of the pre-human ruins found upon an ancient world known as Belphego. Whilst their inquisitorial companion was devoured by the demon lord, a venerable dreadnought of the chapter, named as Cybera, sacrificed himself to expose the blackened heart of this beast, which was then pierced by a precise strike from a nearby librarian. In the end, around a third of the exorcist chapter had been killed, and yet, from the defeat of this prince, peace was to return to Dimmermaar. Moving into the 41st millennium, we must now look at the Tyranid Hive fleet of Behemoth as it first moved into the system of Ultramar. Though the Ultramarines were quite obviously the first to respond to this invasion, they were not the only Space Marines to fight against this extragalactic menace. A trading vessel, known as the Nostros Vex, had brought an infestation of gene stealers to the world of Stonecrawl, and despite being situated on the border of the Ultramar system, it was not the Ultramarines who came to their rescue, but rather it was the Exorcists. Their third company descended to fight upon the broken grounds, only to be met with townships left as desolate husks, with nary a trace of Imperial life to be found. But from the dark shadows did the Tyranids emerge. The gene stealers tore their way out of the ruins, seeking to overwhelm the Marines in a tide of gnashing teeth and rending talons. The Exorcists, however, having been fortified against the horrors of the warp, felt no fear towards a simple alien menace. And so, with a sense of cold efficiency, they moved through the city streets, purging the Xeno's beasts wherever they were to be found. One of their librarians was similarly successful in locating the presiding Broodlord, which was engulfed in a conflagration of Empyrean flames, leaving it as a pile of glittering purple ash. After the Exorcists departed from this world, a group of agents from the Ordo Xenos were dispatched to investigate the conflict here. But from their interrogations of the surviving Imperials, they were met with some rather troubling tales. The citizens stated that though the Marines were indeed their saviors, that the strange incantations and baleful litanies of the chapter still echoed out through their dreams. Around half of the Exorcists were deployed during the chaos of the Badab War, after the Astral Claws had been declared as traitors to the Imperium, with the express order of bringing their master, Luft Huron, to justice. Initially, they performed rather admirably, being successful in engaging with a large fleet of the secessionist Marines via a series of boarding actions. When it came to the final days of this war, the Exorcists had remained at almost full strength, and so they were to take command of some of the climactic assaults. During the attack on Badab itself, they were to assault the orbital defensive fortress of Sentinel Sigma, which was similarly a successful endeavor. Taking their fleets, they then formed a blockade around the world, but this would sadly lead to one of the darkest stains upon their chapter's history. The allied Carcharodons, deployed upon the planet's surface, had initiated the destruction of the central reactors to the larger Hive cities, forcing all of the loyalist and traitor forces to flee from the world in whatever crafts they could find. In the resulting confusion, the Exorcists could not verify the identities nor allegiances of those within these vessels, and so they made the fated decision of firing upon any ship which was in range of their blockade. This resulted in the deaths of many a loyalist Marine. And to make matters worse, the senior commanders of the Astral Claws were still able to escape with the body of Luft Huron. This event would go on to tarnish their legacy during this war, and many of the loyalist forces of the Imperium were left to question as to whether or not the exorcists could truly be trusted in any future conflicts. As it so stands today, since the formation of the Great Rift, which has cleaved our galaxy in twain, the forces of the exorcists are most commonly deployed deep within the darkest reaches of the Imperium Nihilus. Here, demons run rampant as an ever-present threat to the remaining vestiges of humanity, desperately clinging to life within the forlorn expanse. But thanks to the presence of these incorruptible warriors, their worlds may be just a little bit safer against the dark. But behind their effectiveness, they still harbor their great secrets, in that each and every member of the chapter has at one point been possessed by a nightmarish demon of the warp. This willingness to consort with the Hellspawn would be unforgivable to many within the Imperium, and yet we cannot deny that through their methods that the exorcists have emerged stronger and more resilient than we could have ever possibly imagined. With this, my dearest friends, we have come to our end. I thank each and every one of you for listening to this investigation into the Exorcists chapter in its entirety, and know that I will soon return with yet another tale of this incomparably dark galaxy. For now, however, as I once again close this chapter, I must wish you all with a warm goodbye.